Hello, and welcome to our first episode of Remarks and Reflections, a podcast offering insight into topics that are important to the Hillbrook community and the broader worlds of education and parenting. I'm your host, Head of School Mark Silver, and I invite you to join us for what we hope are lively conversations about a whole range of ideas and issues that connect with our vision to inspire children to achieve their dreams and reach beyond themselves to make a difference in the world. I was inspired to do this podcast this year as part of this year's theme, Take Risks. One of our four core values, Take Risks, challenges us to push outside our comfort zone and try new things. Knowing that our core values are meant for all of us, not just children, I decided to take my own risk this year and try the podcast. In future episodes, I will be interviewing a wide range of people, teachers, students, members of the senior leadership team, parents, and people outside our community. Today, however, I wanted to start by sharing a brief version of one of my favorite stories, Many Moons by James Thurber. I shared this story at a recent Common Ground event, and it reminded me what a powerful metaphor this story is for education and parenting. As a side note, Common Ground is a parent education consortium made up of 43 schools along the peninsula and in the South Bay. Hillbrook is a founding member, and we have one of the most active parent contingents. I encourage you to check it out through our portal or on the Common Ground website, commongroundspeakerseries.org. Okay, now back to the story. So the story starts with a princess sick in bed. The king says he'll get anything she desires in order to help her. What does she want? The moon, she replies. Recognizing that this is a tall order, the king calls in his three wisest men, confident one of them can get him the moon. The first man, the Lord High Chamberlain, tells the king he can't get the moon, for it is 35,000 miles away, bigger than the room the princess lies in, and made of molten copper. The second wise man, the royal wizard, also insists he cannot get the moon, for it is 150,000 miles away, made of green cheese, and twice as big as the palace. The third wise man, the royal mathematician, also explains that he cannot get the moon, for it is 300,000 miles away, round and flat like a coin, made of asbestos, and half the size of the kingdom. Worst of all, it is pasted to the sky. The king sends the three wise men away and begins to moan. Nobody can do anything for me. He invites in the court jester, hoping for a little sad music to help him deal with his sorrow. Before he starts to play, however, the court jester asks a question. How big do they say the moon is, and how far away? The king recounts the story of each wise man. After listening carefully, the court jester says, they are all wise men, and so they must all be right. If they are all right, then the moon must be just as large and as far away as each person thinks it is. The thing to do? Ask the princess. Sure enough, the court jester asks the princess, and she explains that the moon is just a little smaller than her thumbnail and made of gold. The king has the royal goldsmith make her the moon. The next day, the princess is feeling well. The king, however, remains deeply concerned. What will the princess do that night when she sees the real moon is in the sky and not around her neck? Again, he calls in his three wisest men. The Lord High Chamberlain suggests dark glasses, but the king responds angrily, she would bump into things. The royal wizard suggests stretching black velvet curtains on poles covering the palace like a circus tent. But the king laments, the Princess Lamonore would not be able to breathe. The royal mathematician suggests setting off fireworks in the gardens every night. But the king rages. Fireworks will keep her awake. She would not get any sleep and she would be ill again. The king gives up in frustration. The court jester comes back in to play him a sad song. Before playing, the court jester asks, what did your wise men say? Again, the king recounts their stories. The court jester nods and then notes, your wise men know everything, and if they cannot hide the moon, then it cannot be hidden. He continues, who could explain how to get the moon when your wise men said it was too large and too far away? It was the Princess Lenore. Therefore, the Princess Lenore is wiser than your wise men and knows more about the moon than they do. He goes to ask the princess. When the court jester arrives, however, It seems he is too late, as she is in the bed looking at the moon in the sky. She, however, looks unfazed. "How can the moon be shining in the sky when it is hanging on a golden chain around your neck?" the court jester asks. She replies with a laugh, pointing out that when she loses a tooth, a new one grows in its place. When the unicorn loses his horn in the forest, a new one grows in the middle of his forehead. And when the royal gardener cuts flowers in the garden, other flowers come to take their place. Thus, she declares, it is the same with the moon. Indeed, she adds, I guess it is the same with everything. So, what does the story teach us? I see three lessons. One, when a group of wise men tell you that something is impossible, don't believe them. Two, be like the court jester. Be more curious than certain. And three, all people, including children, are capable of solving problems if we stop, listen, and create the space for them to solve the problems themselves. It's this last lesson that I want to talk a little bit more about and that I think is so important as a metaphor for how we think about teaching and about parenting. When you hear the story all too often as adults, we hear a child's problem, you know, in this case, you want the moon, and immediately look at it through an adult lens. And we tend to do a couple of things. One, we tend to escalate the situation. So we try to pull together all of our resources and try to figure out how to solve it. That escalation often ends up in taking a small problem and making it a big problem. I often think about young children when they have conflicts with a friend and they'll come home and they'll say, you know, so-and-so was really mean to me today. And sometimes parents will engage that and they'll get really concerned about how mean this child was to their child. And so over the course of the next few days, they'll keep asking. And often what we find, we call it questioning for pain. Often what we find is if we don't keep asking, that a few days later, the same child who was being mean, you know, if you just allow things to play out, what you'll find is that a child will come back to you in a few days and talk about how they spent their whole recess playing with so-and-so. And you'll think to yourself, but I thought you just said that so-and-so wasn't your friend anymore. And you quickly realize that in the world of 5-year-olds or 10-year-olds or 13-year-olds, like these friendships come and go and relationships move at a very fast speed, much different than they do for us as adults. And so again, if we get involved, we often make it harder and we escalate as opposed to allowing children to play that out themselves. Secondly, and I think probably potentially even more importantly, by stepping in and solving or trying to solve children's problems, we inadvertently suggest that children are not resilient enough to solve their own problems and that they aren't able to face and handle the discomfort that is a natural part of life. There's a handful of people who've written about this incredibly well, and over the years I've continually encouraged parents, and these are all people who've actually spoken at Common Ground, which is where my inspiration for sharing this story came the other day when I was talking to Common Ground. But in particular, I think of Wendy Mogul. And if you haven't read her books, Blessings of a Skin Knee, Blessings of a B-, or Voice Lessons, all three of those are fabulous books that help parents think about their role as a parent and how they can both be supportive and be there for their children, but also allow their children the space they need to be their own best problem solvers. Mike Riera, who is a head of school down in Los Angeles now and used to be up here in the Bay Area, wrote a book a long time ago, probably 20 plus years ago, called Uncommon Sense for Parents of Teenagers. And it remains to me the best book that talks about the transition, particularly when you're now talking about a 12, 13, or 14-year-old, as they start to transition to adolescence and how you shift from being a manager, where you are with your younger child, where you really are kind of managing their lives, and as you should with a 6 or 7 or 8-year-old, to a consultant, and the importance of being able to move into that consultant role. And then the last one is Julie Lithcott-Hames out of Stanford, former dean of freshmen, who wrote a book called How to Raise an Adult, and echoed a lot of the same things that Wendy Mogul talked about, but in her case, you know, was at really, you know, one of the top universities in the world, and was struck by the inability of college students to manage life. They could do all types of complex work in a classroom, but they couldn't manage the simple things of life. And she realized that a lot of this, or at least she believes a lot of this, was coming from an overparenting crisis. So, you know, as a parent of three children, I think about these things all the time. But the other thing I want to mention is that as a school, we think about this as well. And again, you know, in the traditional model of education, you envision school people designing really specific experiences for children where they go through things and then they take a test and they share back what they've learned. And it's all very didactic and very controlled. And what we know about that is that it's not necessarily very engaging, nor does it necessarily allow kids space to solve their own problems. And so at Hillbrook, we've spent a lot of time these last few years in particular thinking about how do you create opportunities for children to be their own problem solvers. And so we have a whole range of Reach Beyond programming, which has kind of become the umbrella term coming out of our Scott Center for Entrepreneurship, our Reach Beyond block, our Reach Beyond week. It's a whole series of ways in which we're creating experiences for students to push outside of the classroom and to have real-world learning experiences that enable them to be problem solvers. I encourage you to learn more about that. That'll undoubtedly be a topic for a future episode. And as a school continue to think about like what are the breadths of ways that we can do that from our youngest students in junior kindergarten all the way up through eighth grade. So I ask you as I finish up this episode, you know, ask you and encourage you to think about how can you hold this concept in your head, this notion of remembering to be the court jester, not the king. And to be more curious than you are certain, and to trust in your children's abilities to be their own best problem solvers. You've been listening to Remarks and Reflections, a podcast of Hillbrook School. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast where you get your podcasts. You can also find the Remarks and Reflections blog post at hillbrook.us. Another space where we are looking to connect with and engage members of our community in conversations important to our school, education, and parenting. And as always, you can find our school on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and of course, our website at hillbrook.org. Thank you again for listening to this inaugural effort. I hope to hear from you, and I'm open to feedback, both positive and encouraging, but also with suggestions of potential topics and ways that I can make this even more engaging for our community. Have a great day, have a great week, and be your best.